Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Before we jump into this next episode, I want to tell you a little bit about what we got going on. If you've ever wanted to go hunting with me or the Days in the Wild crew, we are doing a raffle for a 5-day fully outfitted archery hunt. We're actually giving two of those away. It's a $40 entry. But there's only 100 entries sold. So you got a 1 in 100 chance of winning. So it's a really, really good chance to go hunting here in Arizona during the rut on archery hunt. You could actually opt to, if you have a rifle tag, it's past the draw date now, but if you have a rifle tag, you can actually opt for us to take you on the rifle hunt as well. Like I said, 1 in 100 chance. You go to my blog at johnstallone.me, and there will be a raffle section. Just go to the raffle section and purchase your ticket there. We will also be giving away a handful, I think 4 or 5, I don't remember now, but one-day coyote hunts or predator hunts. Those are it's a $400 value. We charge $400 to guide for guided-only predator hunts 1 day. And those are $30, and it's a 1 in 10 chance of winning, which is pretty darn awesome, I think. So 1 in 10 chance of winning, and you can opt to purchase some more days if you want to come out, let's say, for 3-day hunt and get one for free, basically, and purchase some other days. We'll give you a discount. So go to johnstallone.me and check out the raffle. Let's roll into this episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the R3 programs that we're doing. We're going to talk a little bit about why we should be recruiting and some ways to recruit and keep people involved. I have Jim Cricruto with us on from NSF. NSSF, National Shooting Sports Foundation, and he heads up that basically that area within the organization. So, Jim, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, John.
I'm going to apologize right now. I'm like a space cadet today. I don't know. I got like 3 hours of sleep last night, and that's why I'm already swallowing my words. I can't. My mouth is going faster than my brain can keep up with it right now. So
I've been there.
So if I sound like a bumbling idiot, I apologize. Why don't you do us a favor here and give us a little rundown about yourself and how you fit into the puzzle over here?
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in Putnam County, New York. Spent ton of time outdoors, somewhat rural area, and more suburban now. It's about 40 miles north of New York City. Had a traditional path to the outdoors, and grandfather was an outdoorsman, father was an outdoorsman, and very fortunate to have that traditional path growing up. Small game hunting and fishing, and started with squirrels, then missed a ton of rough grouse, and went into deer. And, turkeys became more prevalent, got into turkeys, and now I'm waterfowls in my head, so I'm a big waterfowl hunter. But, now my job as the owner of a 13 and 15-year-old boys is to pass on, as much knowledge and love the outdoors as I can to them, and I'm glad that they enjoy getting outside hunting and fishing as well. So that's the fun side of me, the outdoor side of me. But I grew up, went to school for business and marketing and advertising and research, and held a bunch of positions over the years in those segments. But found a home here at NSSF about 10 years ago at the end of 2009, and really enjoy working within the firearms and ammunition industry.
Awesome. So, Do you live in a city now? Are you still in New York? Or
NSSF is based in Newtown, Connecticut, which is a suburban area. So, Connecticut, most people don't think of as, the great outdoors, but we've still got, some pretty good streams and fields around here to get into if you know where to look.
Right. Yeah. I've never haunted Connecticut. I've been in Connecticut several times, but it was just a ferry ride across the Sound. I never went hunting up there when I lived in New York. We hunted Jersey. We hunted, obviously, New York, Pennsylvania, but never got up to Connecticut. It's funny that you mentioned when turkeys became more prevalent. Like, I don't know if you ever hunted out on Long Island at all, but there was never any turkeys when I was a kid. Now they're everywhere. Like, they're like fleas. That's crazy how many turkeys are out there now.
And one of the great success stories of, the industry and everybody working together, conservation, is the wild turkey. And, I've got a coworker here that lives out on Long Island and tells me about all the game running around out there. But I've not made it out there yet myself. Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of deer. But there's always been a pretty hefty population of deer out on Long Island. I remember in the 80s, we went deer and pheasant hunting, and we always saw deer, especially by the beaches. There was always deer, like on Fire Island and Robin Moses and all that stuff. There was always deer there. But I do feel like even that population has exploded. And I don't know if it's because there's a little less land now. Not that there's a whole lot of building going out there, new building, but, in the late 80s, early 90s, there was quite a bit of stuff like on Eastern Long Island that was building. They were building new stuff, so they were getting rid of some, getting rid of land that deer would occupy, obviously. And now you see more deer in the streets and in the, in the suburban neighborhoods and whatnot. So, pretty cool to see turkey out there now. I've yet to go out there for a spring turkey hunt, but fall turkey, they just opened that season just recently. They didn't have a fall turkey season, but now they do, and it's pretty good hunting. So
nice.
So real quick, I should give us like a overview of what R3, because you hear that thrown around a bunch, and I don't know if everybody knows what that is.
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of history about NSSF, because not everybody knows what NSSF is either.
Oh, true.
And then,
let's do that.
It'll kind of segue into the R3 movement. So National Shooting Sports Foundation is the trade association for the firearms and ammunition industry. We're a member-based organization. Our members are the retailers, the rangers, and the manufacturers, all the people that make the product, sell the product, and the places that you can go use the product. We own and operate SHOT Show, which is a large trade show, and that's how we generate most of our revenue, that along with member fees, and then we turn around and use that revenue to try to improve the industry in several ways. We have a government relations team down in D.C. that's, fighting the good fight, trying to keep sportsmen's rights out there. As you may have heard, there's a lot of anti-sportsmen's bills being written out there, so those folks have their heads on a swivel and keeping busy. And then some of the other stuff we do is try to provide information on what's going on in the marketplace, as well as trying to bring new people to the shooting sports. And I'm involved in both of those, the latter two, providing information. We conduct a lot of research on different segments, women gun owners, modern sporting rifle gun owners, handgun owners, shotgun sports, different types of ethnicity and what they're interested in, millennials and generational studies. We segment out consumers by their wants and needs and motivations. We look at who's participating, how often they're participating, And, you know, we just try to couple all this together and put a story together to tell our members, you know, what's going on so they can better create products that'll, you know, are wanted by the consumers, and then also get them to help promote hunting and target shooting to get more folks out of, in the field into the range. And, you know, we've made some really good progress lately, excited about some of the things that we've got going on. And R3 is relatively new. I mean, R3 stands for Recruit, Retain, and Reactivate. And, you know, when I first started, you know, 10 years ago, it was really only R2, Recruit and Retain. We didn't have that Reactivate. But through some of the research that we conducted, you know, we think that there's about 100 million gun owners in the U.S., and we think that there's about 50 million active participants in hunting and target shooting. So we said, well, we better reactivate those 50 million people. You know, they have access to a firearm that for whatever reason they're not using it. So we're working with the industry, ranges, retailers, especially, to get the word out saying, hey, if you own a firearm, here's what you can do with it. You know, if you own it for personal protection, come to the range and practice. But you can also, you know, join a league, you know, IDPA league or, you know, shotgun sports and, of course, getting out in the field. And we're seeing a lot of folks that are, you know, coming through with a non-traditional path to get out in the field. So some exciting times ahead for us. A lot of people involved in R3. It's certainly not just NSSF, but all the, you know, conservation organizations, National Wild Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, everybody's getting on board. You know, and there's a lot of different directions. State agencies, state wildlife agencies, you know, are doing some programs to get folks out in the field. But, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do right now is get everybody on the same page. Instead of having, you know, 50 people going 50 different directions, we're trying to work together. We're working with the Council to Advance Hunting and the Shooting Sports and trying to, you know, focus on what's working and maybe what's not working so good, and sharing our success stories and, you know, also sharing some of the pain of, you know, failures so people don't make the same mistake.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Are you guys doing anything along the lines of, like, hug-a-hunter programs or anything like that where you're trying to educate the non-hunting or non-shooting sports public, you know.
Oh, yeah, we've got some programs
going on. What we do.
Yeah. Okay. I love, you know, what Colorado has done with the Hug a Hunter program, and, you know, some other states, I believe Michigan's working on something like that as well. And, you know, the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, which is kind of the governing body for the 50 state wildlife agencies, is working on those type of things, as well as something that they just came out with called Making It Last. And that's also an ad campaign. And the it can be anything. It can be conservation. It can be, you know, bald eagles. It can be hunting. It can be the tradition. It can just be getting outside. So, yeah, they're... Everybody knows the need to, you know, to reach new audiences and explain what's going on with hunters, because hunters are really the original conservationists. There's, you know, a lot of other groups that are claiming to be, you know, the ones that are helping wildlife, but really, just because of the way the funding mechanism is set up in the United States, the North American model for wildlife conservation is funded by excise taxes on firearms and ammunition, and all those funds, which, you know, $900 million a year, so $12 billion to date, go directly towards state wildlife agencies. And those are the folks that are out there, you know, buying land, maintaining that land, improving that land for habitat, and not only, you know, for huntable species, but, you know, for songbirds, for pollinators, you know, for clean water.
Yeah.
So without hunters, you know, there wouldn't be state agencies. Without the state agencies, there wouldn't be the conservation efforts that are going on right now. And that message needs to get out there to the general population.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of preaching on my soapbox about that that very, it's just, I feel like we have such an uphill battle because we're so late to the game with this, because the other side has been doing such a good job of pumping out propaganda for so many years. This is probably like the third or fourth time I've told this story, but you haven't heard me say it. Because I remember back in the 80s when I took my hunter safety, you know, back then, one of the things they taught us was, you know, don't flaunt your game, you know, kind of keep to yourself, you know, don't bring a deer strapped to the hood of your car back into town, and, you know, that kind of stuff. Basically, hunters really kind of took to the shadows. We like kind of worked in the background, you know, while the anti-hunters did the complete opposite. They got, you know, actors involved, big name media, you know, people involved, and there's so much stuff out there. As a matter of fact, I did a Google search the other day, and I just put in the search, where does the money for conservation come from? Something along those lines. I don't remember the exact words that I used, but, and like something like 7 out of the 10 articles that popped up in Google were on anti-hunting sites, and only 3 of them were pro-hunting sites. Actually, I think the first number one was in Hunter Ed, was on the Hunter Ed website. But other than that, you know, and that's scary, because there's people out there that don't know, and what's the first thing that they're going to do? They're going to go to the internet, and they're going to jump on, and they're going to, okay? Well, I heard, yep, you know, so-so arguing the other day with a guy saying, oh, yeah, well, hunting does more for, you know, wildlife or whatever, so he wants to go find out for himself. And he goes and does that, and he goes, oh, that guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, because it's right here on the internet. Must be true.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I feel like that's exactly like one of the biggest things right now, that the big agencies need to start looking at changing the tides a little bit. You know,
yeah, they are the other side. There is better communicators than we were, with human communicators. Now, you know, wildlife biologists and state agencies are great at talking to animals, as you talked about earlier. Turkeys are all over the place. Deer are all over the place. You know, now are the good old days when it comes to wildlife populations. And a buddy of mine says, you know, we've done a really good job with wildlife populations. Now it's time to focus on hunter populations. And, you know, to their credit, just over the last 3 to 4 years, state wildlife agencies have hired on R3 coordinators and managers that are not really wildlife biologists, but they're more marketers, they're more advertisers, they're more folks that know how to communicate better with humans, not as much with wildlife. And, you know, so we're on the cusp of, you know, doing a much better job communicating the message. We're excited to be working with the state agencies and those new staff. And this was all very well planned out, again, by the Council to Advance Hunting and Shooting Sports and a lot of other organizations that developed the strategic plan to, you know, let's get some folks together that are going to help us communicate. They built an online community now that has, I think, 2,000 and plus members. Again, we're sharing those ideas, the success stories and stuff. So future's looking bright, but, you know, we got to stop talking and start doing right now. And that's about where we are today with that. You know, we talked about the one R of reactivating those folks, but the two other R's of recruiting and retaining, you know, retaining, we've done a lot of research on, you know, what people are currently doing with a firearm when it comes to hunting. And, you know, they may be a turkey hunter and a deer hunter, but then we also ask them, you know, what they want to do. Well, they'd love to go elk hunting. They'd love to go hog hunting. Mm-hmm. And then how can we get you to do those things? And they need information, you know, like, you know, us East Coast guys, right? We don't know how to draw a tag in Montana for an elk, and it's complicated in all yeah. these different areas. And I mean, so we just need information, and we need to be able to, you know, really easily digest, because we have the want to do some other stuff, but we need to be invited by Montana, and we need to be explained to how easy it is to, you know, the process, rather than just say, oh, I'd love to do that. So we're learning stuff like that on the retaining side, trying to get people doing more things with that firearm, the field. And then mm-hmm. the recruiting is really the key, right? We've got some research that shows that there's 24 million Americans out there that don't own a firearm, that have a high interest in owning their first firearm in the next couple of years for a lot mm-hmm. of different purposes, personal protection, target shooting, and hunting. And we're seeing, you know, the hunting, you know, again, comes from that non-traditional path. Why, we ask them why they want to own a firearm for hunting, and they want to have, you know, just, they want to get that organic meat that they keep hearing right. about and seeing, you know, they're paying, you know, out the nose for it at the Whole Foods, and they're really not sure, is it really hormone-free? Is it really, you know, a free-range animal? Is it really organic? But when you're out there in the field, that, and you know for sure, you know, that the quarry that you're after is, you know, sustainable, it's organic, and it is, you know, something that will, they can feel very proud about feeding their family. So they need two yeah. things as well. They need information on how to get started, and they need an invitation. And I think that's where, you know, your audience can help us in that invitation part of it. We're doing our part with trying to provide information on how to get started. But, you know, if each hunter out there can bring somebody new, then, you know, we'll be better off down the road and tell that story about conservation. And we're kind of bundling it as what we call Plus One, the campaign that mm-hmm. we're trying to get our members, the manufacturers, involved in. And we built a couple consumer-facing websites, Let's Go Hunting and Let's Go Shooting, to provide those new folks the information that they want, working with some organizations out there like Powderhook, trying to connect them with mentors and Quality Deer Management Association, Union Sportsman's Alliance, Sportsman Foundation, a lot of great organizations out there that are all coming together to work on this.
That's awesome. You just brought up something that made me think. Well, I'm going to ask you this question, and then I'm going to take what you said, and I want to put this out there in a minute here. But so, you know, a lot of the people that I speak to about doing recruitment, you know, a lot of times I'll mention it to hunters, or when I first started talking about it on my podcast a couple of years back. I got a lot of kickback. I got a lot of people like, oh, why would I want to, you know, create more competition for myself? So there's already too many hunters. There's not enough public land. It's too hard to get a tag and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, well, let's talk about, I mean, you kind of already started to mention why it's important, but let's kind of elaborate on why the greater good, creating yourself a little bit of competition, or maybe you can tell us some ways that we can bring people on that don't necessarily or are not necessarily going to cause us a harder time to get tags or more competition in the field for public lands and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and it's a great point, right? We all love to see other hunters at the gas station or at the diner, but we don't want to see them hit our duck spot right in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a good point there, but, you know, you think big picture, right? And everybody loves, you know, all hunters love being outdoors, and, you know, a lot of hunters like to share that, and they want to provide that feeling to others. And there are a lot of other people out there interested. What folks may not know is, again, these are the good times. There's more game out there than really there's ever been in the last couple of generations. I don't know if you've seen the news recently, but we've got, you know, a really good Fish and Wildlife staff right now, U.S. Fish and Wildlife staff, that are looking for ways to increase access. They've opened up a lot of land, millions of acres of land, on national wildlife refuges, you know, maybe more out west than here in the east, but they're working on that. You know, state wildlife agencies are now using more modern ways of showing folks where their wildlife management areas are. Google Maps, you know, you can go on a lot of different Department of Natural Resources and it'll show you, you know, where to go and where to park and state forests, you know, hundreds and hundreds of acres that, you know, are not really being utilized by that many folks. So we got to get past the mindset that, you know, somebody's going to take our, you know, the last deer or something like that out there. There's plenty of game out there. And, you know, without hunters, again, there goes the model for conservation. We worked with the Quality Deer Management Association, QDMA, and they have got a great program. It's a field-to-fork program. And, again, reaching that non-traditional audience. And QDMA has got chapters all over the U.S. We worked with the New Hampshire chapter last fall, and we actually brought out staff from Ruger Firearms and Sig Sauer Firearms, both located in the manufacturing facilities in New Hampshire. And we brought out 24 folks, took them through hunter education, QDMA mentors were there, and just, I mean, these folks wanted to teach somebody new. They wanted to pass on their knowledge. They wanted, and you could just see it in their, you know, their eyes and feel it in the stories that they love taking out new folks. So there's a lot of people out there that are doing it, and they just needed somebody that was interested to go afield with them. So, you know, we're trying to be the matchmaker and get folks out there. But, you know, it can be done organically just by anybody. So.
Yeah. I mean, I basically put out a challenge like 2 years ago. I said, you know,
hey guys, just a real quick break. Pardon the interruption. I want to talk to you about becoming a patron of the show. It's super easy. You just go to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters on my Podbean account, and at the top right-hand corner, you'll see a green button that says Become a Patron. Or if you're using the Podbean app, it's right there. Just click on the button, Become a Patron, from any of the episodes. I really go out of my way not to bombard you with a bunch of ads and clutter up the episodes. I really like to keep it as educational and as valuable as possible. It really goes a long way, and I want to say it again, that even a dollar a month, pledging a dollar a month, $12 a year, may not seem like a whole lot, but it means the world to me. It helps me take care of the cost of producing this show, and I really appreciate it, and I'd appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to this episode.
If you can introduce one new hunter, you know, a year, think about how exponentially how much good that can do, you know. Or even if it's two in your whole lifetime, in your whole hunting career, if we'll call it a career, you know, your whole hunting life, if you introduce two more people, you know, that, I don't know how many, what's the amount of hunters in North America right now, or in the United States, I should say, because.
Well, we've got about 20 million people that identify as hunters, you know, and that's okay. Somebody that's at least bought a license within the last 5 years, and about, you know, okay. 12 million people go annually, but it's not the same people. You know, somebody might, I mean, you maybe go 5 out of 5 years. Other people might go 1 out of 5 years, 2 out of 5 years. So on an annual basis, you know, maybe 12 million people afield, but overall there's 20 million people that have bought a license within a 5-year period.
Gotcha.
So still a minority, right? You know,
for sure.
You know, there's a lot to be said by growing that, you know, one, sharing what you love, but two, again, you know, there's a lot of forces out there that are taking away sportsmen's rights. You grow more sportsmen, you're going to, you know, have different mentalities, and people are going to vote differently if they understand something better, even if you just explain to folks what hunting's about, you know.
Exactly.
try to, there's a lot of misperceptions out there about hunters and gun owners.
Oh, well, think about it. I mean, heck, most people's first impression of a hunter is because they watch some movie. I mean, you watch like Bambi or something. I mean, if you think of that hunter in that light, he's, you know, the antagonist. Anywhere in media, we're made to be out to be the bad guy, or at least suspect in some way or another, you know, something about that guy you don't trust, you know, that's how it's always portrayed. And, so of course, somebody who doesn't have the education or doesn't understand how the system works, doesn't understand the benefits of hunting or what we do conservation wise, you know, that first impression is going to be the lasting impression. And
yeah,
that's how the other side's winning, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, states are trying to make it as easy as possible to introduce somebody new. I think there's 40 states that now take part in what's called the Families Afield. You know, cause one of those barriers is that, you know, 12, 16 hours of hunter education. So, you know, hey, let's go hunting tomorrow. Well, that can't really happen, you know, because people have to pass mm-hmm. hunter education. But those 40 or so states that have Families Afield program will allow for apprentice license sales. So if I do want to take somebody tomorrow, I'm an experienced hunter, I'm going to, you know, watch over the person I'm mentoring, they can buy an apprentice license, which is a try before you buy. They don't have to pass hunter education to get that. I'll take them afield, you know, give them some education, and, you know, then after they go afield and they like it, they can go back and take hunter education that way. And a lot of folks don't know that opportunity exists. You know, they might say, oh, I can't take it hunting because you didn't pass hunter education. Well, check your regulations, your state regulation guide, and look into that Families Afield or apprentice license program. And yes, you can. You can take them.
You know, that's the first I actually heard of that.
Yeah, there's actually been over 2 million apprentice licenses sold. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me that you haven't heard of it, because a lot of people haven't heard of it because, again, you know, not to their fault, but state wildlife agencies are good at talking to animals. They're not so good at talking to people. So we actually partnered with Sportsman's Alliance out of Ohio, great, great organization that's fighting for sportsman's rights. But we worked with them, and we worked with 5 state wildlife agencies to promote what they had with the Families Afield and Apprentice License Program to current hunters. And just mm-hmm. by promoting it, you know, through emails and through Facebook and stuff like that, we saw a 3% lift in apprentice license sales. So people will use it if they know it's there, and that's where we are now. So, you know, the future's looking bright because we haven't done the greatest job of communicating what hunting's all about and the opportunities that exist and all the game that's out there and the access that's opening up. But if we can convey that, I think we're going to see you know, some success. And, you know, hunting's big business, you know, $24 billion industry. And, right. You know, we want to, you know, our members obviously want to see that continue, and for financial reasons, but obviously the traditional aspect of it and the love of getting outdoors and really being the ones that are taking care of nature and conservation, it's important on so many levels.
Right, right. What if somebody wanted to get involved? What are some ways you could recommend the average guy to get involved? It's apart from just, you know, bringing somebody out hunting, but
I think that there's a lot of ways. You know, every state's got, you know, local Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, or QDMA chapters. You know, join an organization, spread the word, you know, follow, sign up for email newsletters from Sportsman's Alliance, and then, you know, spread the word to your fellow hunters on, hey, you know, there's anti-sportsman legislation coming up. We should, you know, make sure we spread the word and get out and vote. Try to explain. You don't have to take somebody hunting. Obviously, that's the best thing you could do, but just explain to non-hunters the opportunities that are out there, and you know, why folks enjoy getting outside so much. We are providing a lot of information. If they need to, you know how to get started, they can go to Let's Go Hunting or letsgoshooting.org and mm-hmm. find some of that information. You know, there's a lot of videos, hundreds of videos that you can have folks share, send them to their, non-hunting friends. Just to, hey, if you're interested, you know you talked about it once, or you might be interested, and here's a way to get started.
Awesome. I want to caution people about, I want you to talk to people and educate them on what we do for conservation, but before you do that, make sure you educate yourself and arm yourself with the right information. So one, you don't sound like an idiot, and two, you don't want to misinform people. It's definitely, I've seen it before, because I've heard people like having arguments, mm-hmm. or not necessarily argument, more like debate, and it's just, I feel like it's important that you take the time and learn the proper, the right information. That way you could put your best foot forward and in turn putting hunting's best foot forward when you're talking to the non-hunting public. I think that's all I really got for you as far as questions are concerned. I wanted to ask if you would share with us one of your favorite hunting stories, if you got time.
Sure. Yeah, I've got, trying to narrow down to one is always tough, but, so many memories of obviously getting the field with my dad and learning the ropes from him, and then just, having the realization, what's it all about? You're out there without any distractions and clear in your mind, and you're out there before anything else knows you're there, and you can see the first snowflake, when a storm's coming in, or, I've had experiences where, just calm, waiting for something, to happen, and, all of a sudden a rough grouse goes flying by my head, and as I'm in my tree stand, I'm like, oh, that was cool. And then a second later, a red-tailed hawk is chasing it. I was like, that was even cooler. I'm sitting on the ground turkey hunting, and I've had, rabbits run by me. I was like, that's neat. And then a second later, there's a coyote chasing that rabbit. That's even neater. So many great experiences out there. But now, I'm teaching my boys to do it. And last year, my youngest was 12 and was first year waterfowl hunting, and he got his first Drake mallard. And I mean, forget about my experience. Just, seeing it in somebody else as nothing like it, So I'd love for other people to get that experience and feel, the feeling of passing on the tradition and really, playing part in the big picture.
Jim, so if you could just, if anybody wants to get involved with NSFF, oh my God, I don't know why I can't say that really well, but it's like a tongue twister for me. But if you want to get involved, I know you're more of a business-to-business and not an individual, but go ahead and explain the membership to us a little bit. And
sure. Yeah, we've got 10,000 members that primarily are the manufacturers, the ranges and retailers. So if you're within the firearms and ammunition industry and you're not a member, we'd love to have you. Our memberships start at as little as $75 a year. So NSSF.org is where you can find out more information on becoming a member. And if you're an individual outside the industry and you just want information on what's going on out there, we provide a lot of content on NSSF.org. And Let's Go Hunting, Let's Go Shooting. So, there's something for everybody there. But appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast today, John. And, look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming on and taking time out of your busy day. You guys are doing good work. I'm proud to be associated with you. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.